Okay, so in posing and trying to go some way towards answering this question, what I mean by cognitive enhancement devices are devices that are used for brain stimulation or to some way modulate brain activity, and in particular those devices that are being sold at the moment for so-called cognitive enhancement. I'm particularly looking at this question because this is the context which motivates it in the regulatory context. Okay, so just a bit of background. So there are new devices on the market which are promising cognitive enhancement effects. And these devices themselves, the mechanisms aren't actually that new. They're being used in research and in early clinical trials in clinical populations. And these sorts of mechanisms are transcranial direct current stimulation, which involves passing a small direct current through the brain to modulate neuronal activity, and transcranial magnetic stimulation, which uses electromagnetic fields to induce action potentials. And there are some promising clinical results with these. But what is new is that they're being used, they're being sold now for cognitive enhancement. But they're currently only held to basic product safety standards because they don't make any treatment claims. So the current regulation that covers medical devices doesn't capture them because they don't claim to treat any existing condition or disease. They make claims about enhancing capacities. But regulators are now thinking about that these sorts of devices should actually be brought under the regulation. But to do so will involve assessing their risks and benefits. And the current paradigm of looking at clinical benefits, medical benefits, isn't going to be fit for purpose. So there's a new challenge in defining and assessing enhancement benefits in this regulatory context. So this is what I'm going to look at today. So just some examples of these, and I've actually got one here, which I guess I can just pass around. You can have a look if you're curious. This is the Focus device, which is, do you want to pass it around? You can have a look, open it up. So this is a TDCS device. These are electrodes up here, and they sit on the forehead here. And the idea is that it passes a current through the brain to help improve your focus. And you can see that the marketing says it's a headset for gamers, that you can increase the plasticity of your brain, make your synapses fire faster. All sounds very good, very exciting, doesn't it? But it also is very careful to point out that it offers no medical benefits. And it is for this reason that it's not regulated, at least not by the FDA, and it wouldn't fall under European regulatory directives either. Another example of a TDCS device, again, very excited about itself. I don't know if you can see that from the back, but it says that new scientific papers are being published every day. The results are incredible. You can really improve your brain function. And it's, in particular, it says it increases cognitive performance. It gives examples of enhanced language, mathematical ability, attention span, all these sorts of things, which are actually effects that are being seen in research laboratories with these sorts of techniques. However, it also gives you a very important note that these results are from their finding and may be incomplete and or completely wrong. So if you've got to the point of reading to the bottom of their promotional material, you'll get that caveat. But again, this device isn't regulated. One final example, this is something using magnetic stimulation, which claims to be able to create intense and unique altered states of consciousness, and enhance meditation, mood enhancement. Again, it notes that it doesn't treat any condition and therefore gets out of any sort of regulation. So, in a paper from Martha Farah and colleagues back in 2004, they were saying that regulatory agencies might find their responsibilities expanding into considerations of lifestyle benefits and the definition of acceptable risk in exchange for such benefits. And so this is indeed happening. Regulators are now starting to think how they should amend their paradigms, their frameworks, to be able to account for these sorts of products promising enhancement effects. And we might think, well, if they don't confer medical benefits, perhaps one way we could start to think about them would be to compare enhancement effects with cosmetic surgery and the benefits that we might accrue from such procedures. And in a paper from 1999, Maxwell Mellum made such a comparison, and he pointed out that in the case of liposuction devices, the panel of experts advising the FDA decided that it could only characterize the benefits from these devices in terms of patient satisfaction. So not really a sort of performance measure, just a sort of, were you glad that you went through with it? And the UK agency that's in charge of medical products and healthcare make similar sort of claims about cosmetic devices, particularly implantable and other invasive products that don't have a medical purpose. So examples would be cosmetic contact lenses or dermal fillers. And they say that weighing up the risks and benefits of a product which does not have a medical purpose is different than for medical devices. And that they say because of this, manufacturers should ensure that their products present either no or the minimum acceptable risk. And this is because the current assessment of costs and benefit comes out as zero because it's not a clinical benefit. But cognitive enhancement devices will be a bit different from this because you can actually measure increases in performance. So it's not just sort of guessing at whether people enjoy using them or not. There are lots and lots of studies with healthy individuals showing effects on language skills, attention, memory, numerosity, and this sort of thing. So in the same way that the laboratory tests can use clinical populations and determine increases in performance in, say, working memory or something like this, they can use the very same tests on healthy adults to see an increase in performance for the same sort of cognitive domain. So we can measure, we have some sort of measure of the benefit in those terms. But we still might say, well, the benefits of enhancement are still more subjective than traditional medical interventions. And this might be sort of summed up in this finding from a study from Barbara Sahakian and colleagues looking at modafinil and their cognitive enhancing effects. And regardless of any objective improvements, subjects reported feeling significantly more alert, attentive, and energetic on modafinil than placebo. So this is the sort of thing that you can't have a performance indicator for, really. They're just sort of feeling more alert. So perhaps there's something here that makes a difference. But then we can say the same about other medical interventions. So things like pain relief or antidepressants for elevating mood, these are similarly subjective and don't have performance indicators. But there might be another way in which enhancement benefits are different. And this would be about the question of whether an effect even was an enhancement or desirable at all. So there are some effects that can be found with TMS, where if you impair the part of the brain that sort of imbues incoming stimuli with meaning and pattern, so prior knowledge is sort of top-down bias, if you impair that, and interestingly it's the same part of the brain that's impaired in autistic people, you can find some sort of effects that have been called savant-like. So for example, it can improve drawing skills, judgments of numbers. If you're flashed a screen with loads of dots and you just have to make a quick guess, your judgments about that are better. Proofreading, where you're not biased by prior knowledge. But this is technically an impairment. So here what really seems to become the question is, well, is this effect valuable, regardless of what we want to call it? And I think this is really encapsulated in this this qualitative data from another of Sahakian's papers, where she interviewed healthy scientists taking modafinil for cognitive enhancement. And their self-reports revealed that the subjective effects range from moderate to mild, but very valuable to me. So the sort of mildness, this that may be potential smallness of an objective benefit, is not the only thing that we should be considering here. It might be very valuable to some person. So what I want to say is that there are important distinctions to be made here when we think about assessing benefits of enhancement, and indeed other technologies more generally. We can think about objective benefits, which are measurable improvements in cognitive performance. So things like working memory improvements. Subjective benefits, which may be experiential and more difficult to measure. So something just like feeling sharper. And then the value of these benefits, which will importantly vary depending on the individual's goals and preferences. So for example, a measurable increase in working memory might be invaluable to a mathematician, but of little value to an athlete. Feeling sharper might be really important to somebody who's in perhaps their later years and starting to worry about cognitive decline. Feeling sharper might be really important to that person, whereas for someone maybe in their 20s, they don't sort of care that much, perhaps, or as much about feeling sharp all the time. So this is also sort of encapsulated, this idea, in this quotation from the President's Council on Bioethics. They're talking about moving from medical practice beyond therapy, but I think this also resonates with the regulatory context, that they say that when the goal is restoring health, the doctor's discretion is guided by an agreed upon and recognisable target, but a physician prescribing for goals beyond therapy is in uncharted waters. Although fully armed with the means, he has no special expertise regarding the end, neither what it is nor whether it is desirable. And I would say this is an important consideration for regulators as well. Even when we do know what the end is, let's say it's enhanced memory, whether it is desirable or not is less easy to determine. But what I want to say is that this is more true for enhancements than it is for so-called medical benefits. But that this doesn't, in saying this, I'm not relying on a sharp distinction between treatment and enhancement, but just saying something about the nature of the effects that tend to be called treatments and those that tend to be called enhancements. And this is because of the following. So since what is fundamental for a basic or lower level of well-being will be more or less universal to all individuals, and this is an empirical claim, but I think it's probably right, but what is required for higher levels of well-being will diverge in line with the diversity of individuals' life goals. And two, a basic level of well-being is necessary before higher levels of well-being can be reached. The effects labelled as treatments will be more universally valued than the effects labelled as enhancements. And this is a really important consideration when we think about when we think about enhancements. There was a slide earlier, I think, that that is missing from this, but it doesn't matter. Okay, so what I've tried to do here, and I am going to explain it, is to try to set those two claims graphically. So if to really show that what we're thinking about here is the continuum of well-being, and that treatment enhancement sort of overlaps on top, but what's important is well-being. So these circles, let's imagine this is sort of the population of people. And so it represents diversity in value in terms of consensus. So at the lower ends of well-being, something like not being in chronic pain is going to be valuable for everybody, whatever your goals are, and indeed whichever theory of well-being we think is the right one. Not being in chronic pain is going to be really important. When you get to sort of middle levels of well-being, things will start to diverge. So physical agility will be important to some people. I mean, let's say a third, this is completely schematic. Concentration will be important for others, depending on what your goals are. When you get to really high levels of well-being, you might have things like having a discerning palate will be important to a small minority of people who particularly enjoy food and wine. Foreign languages might be very important to people who like to immerse themselves in different cultures. Fine motor skills might be important to archers, and this sort of thing. So if you think that the, can imagine that the sort of treatment enhancement rough distinction would go somewhere there, you can see that divergence in value is much less for those sorts of effects than it is for the effects that would be called enhancement. And also that the sorts of things down here are fundamental, are necessary before you can reach higher levels of well-being. So whether you're physically agile or can concentrate is kind of irrelevant if you're in chronic pain. And you need sort of physical agility before you can achieve fine motor skills, and concentration before you can pursue foreign languages. So this is sort of represents the relationship between the effects that we might call treatments, that we might call enhancements, their relationship to well-being. So just to sum up, so far what I think the important conclusions are is that instead of thinking that, well, enhancements are just sort of this thing that we can't measure, perhaps they're similar to cosmetic surgery and cosmetic interventions, objective and subjective effects of cognitive enhancement devices can be identified, distinguished, and to some extent quantified. But that where these effects do differ from medical interventions is going to be that assessing the value of these effects is more difficult for cognitive enhancement devices than for medical devices, because they're implicated in higher levels of well-being, where preferences and goals diverge more than at lower levels of well-being. And because of this, regulators should lean on the side of consumer choice rather than the suggested requirement of no or minimal risk for cognitive enhancement devices, because there are benefits. The difficulty is not trying to work out what they are, the difficulty is working out how much they should count in an assessment of risks versus benefits, and which risks are reasonable to take in pursuit of these benefits. So what's going to be really important is to provide consumers with information, and that experts should identify what the risks and benefits of cognitive enhancement devices are, but consumers, how much they matter. So I'll stop there, and we can discuss what you think.